Hey, EAA Radio, this is Digital Dave. I'm back out on the boards and a little behind the power curve, as they say. And we're talking with Don Brown, formerly from the ATC Atlanta Center.
Atlanta Center.
And he wrote for AvWeb.
Well, I was speaking of Atlanta Center, a lot of people, when they talk about air traffic control, they just say tower. Always talking about towers.
Oh, yes.
So what are some of the differences between, as a controller and also as far as the functions go for airspace? I mean, we all know what's going on our side of it, but it's just one frequency to another for us, between centers and TRACONs and tower facilities.
Excellent question. Well, as everybody knows, the tower works the airspace 3 miles around the airport. Then you got TRACONs that work out to up to 40 miles or so. And then you come and talk to the centers. We were talking earlier about how pilots get really nervous, and again, it's the same thing. Even the guys that are no longer student pilots and whatnot, they're just used to flying around in the terminal environment. All of a sudden, one day, they get to some oddball center like us, and they say contact center, and it's like, ooh.
It's a lot faster, the communication.
It's the spooky
busy
guys. The biggest thing is the volume of airspace that we're watching. Obviously, it's all on radar, but the volume of the airspace means that our attention is just all over the place. We can have up to 2 or 3 different frequencies that we're working on. And since we're talking about push to talk, part of maintaining situational awareness is that the controller gives an instruction to a pilot and says, November 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, climb and maintain 7,000. And you as a pilot don't hear a readback on anybody else's part. It's a good clue that he may be using 2 frequencies. And that's because of the staffing level they have these days. A combined up sector is getting more and more normal as opposed to abnormal. T-28s are loud, aren't they?
Yes,
yeah,
they are.
We tried to do something about that noise level out there.
Yeah, we told them to turn it down.
They're not
to mention, it's distracting watching all these guys out here.
Yes, we've got the visual up here as well.
That's an ambiance.
You wouldn't think a center guy would know what an airplane looked like.
But, just give you a little green bar to watch.
They don't look at all like that.
But anyway, the volume of airspace we work, the number of frequencies that we can work, we try to keep it down to 1 frequency per sector, but again, they're combining up sectors a lot more than they used to, and it's always been done to some degrees, especially at the slower times or the midnight shifts and whatnot. Speaking of the midnight shifts, the area I worked, we'd have 5 frequencies. And then you'd have guys on the ground that were trying to call you for a clearance. And, you know, a guy 100 miles away, there's no way in the world he's going to hear him. Of course, the center couldn't hear him half the time either. So part of the situational awareness, if you hear a controller issue a control instruction, then you know that it requires readback. If you can't hear it, at least mentally count off in your mind. So, you know, read it back if that works for you for a sense of timing. But give the guy, you know, 5, 10, 15 seconds to answer the clearance before you say anything that you might want to say on the radio.
Yeah, you're basically waiting to make sure the frequency's clear.
All right.
And that was actually, you mentioned him, controller, potentially being on 2 different frequencies. The new system, they're consolidating a lot of the, and this is the TRACON facilities. I don't know how much the centers are affected with this, but they also have the digital system that they've been trying to install in the various centers as opposed to just handing off the tapes. But, you know, I still hear, you know, the D-side communications going on. So
how
is the new system, the implementation, affecting, I guess what I want to say is the controller's job? Is it actually making your workload better, or is it just in this transition period that we're having some turnover?
You'll have to advise me what digital system are they using?
Well, the new system, they're trying to replace it with, as opposed to handing off the paper tape. I've seen some of the implementation. I don't know if it's
Raycon. Oh, you're talking about URIT?
I think so.
URIT is...
I'm asking about it, so I'll let you talk about
it. URIT's probably not the subject you want me talking about. See, Darren's back in the back shaking his head.
Too much experience or too little?
URIT was implemented, I guess we worked on it about 6 months before I retired. It's quite a difference. you being in the human factors business, perhaps will appreciate this, and I'll leave the URIT subject alone.
No, URIT sounds like an acronym. So
user request evaluation tool.
Okay.
Okay. And
that sounds really technical.
Yeah.
Sounds like a sign of priority.
What it was designed to do in the lab and in the places like CAMI, and it was designed to facilitate users approving more. Controllers being able to approve more requests from the users as far as direct routings and whatnot. What it turned into in the center was a replacement for paper strips.
Okay, I think that's what I was talking about. Yeah.
And a unforeseen consequence of this is it tremendously reduced the workload on the D side, and that's made it easier to work a sector with just one person. Now, that's not necessarily a good thing. That's like making your co-pilot's job a whole lot easier and deciding you don't need a co-pilot anymore.
Right.
So I have some real heartburn with that. I will say that it's overwhelmingly popular amongst the controllers because of the functions that it does do. But back on the human factor side of the equation, it's, again, you're working sectors with just one person a lot more. And tying that into the subject, controllers spend a good amount of time talking on the telephone, coordinating with other controllers. So if you give a call to the center, especially, and they don't answer right away, that's usually the number one reason is they're on the landline coordinating with another controller, and they can't answer both at the same time, obviously.
They're coordinating a handoff and things like that.
I'm sorry, say it again.
They're actually coordinating a handoff of a flight transitioning from one zone to another.
They could be coordinating all kind of information. Most handoffs these days are automatic, but
the point outs and the
point outs and you know, just
altitude
control for turns. There's innumerable things.
She knows an awful lot about this stuff.
It's amazing.
I've been sitting.
Yeah, it's scary.
I've been sitting listening to Center Communications for the last year, and I tell you, as a pilot, I have a new appreciation for the volume of information that you guys are pushing around in there. You know, when they go offline, it could be another frequency. It could be online communications.
It could be ordering a hoagie.
This is very difficult to explain to pilots, but centers are the repository of all the flight information. In other words, you file it with Flight Service Station, or try to.
Right.
Do what's whatever. All that information is sent to the center. Approach controllers do a much better job than center controllers do of working without the information. In other words, they can make it up as it goes along.
Right.
You call them with for a request for, you know, an IFR flight plan, and they put in very limited information because they're going to hold it usually internally. In other words, guy, he needs an IFR clearance into Oshkosh. He'll call up, you know, the approach control or whatever. I guess it's be the center down here, but say it was an approach control. The approach control never puts him into the national system as a full flight plan. Centers always do because they are the national system, and there's a lot more information that has to go along with it than, you know, three things that tower controllers know for you, you know, give you a clearance to the airport. So it's just really a frame of reference. Center controllers are much more intent on making sure the information is correct and making sure it gets into the computer where we can send it around to everyone else.
So it almost sounds like there's more action in a center than there is in a tower.
Well, yes and no.
Different action.
Ours is, again, oriented towards information. When you get to the tower and approach controls and whatnot, the airplanes are obviously getting closer and closer all the time. Things get more critical. They got less maneuvering room as far as their maneuvering speed is down. Then you got, you know, runways, and watching all this activity out here reminds you just how close airplanes can be. Center, we try not to get them, you know, less than 5 miles, but there is a vast amount of information that has to be pushed around the entire system to make that work, and like I say, centers are just much more heavily into that.
Well, and how do you feel, because your area of expertise is communications and safety, we have, so this a lot of these new systems and proposed implementations of systems, many of those which we're all aware are potentially coming down the pike and not.
Whether we want them or not.
And we've all got our opinions on them, but how do you feel that, in your opinion, that's the impact on safety?
I get the rap from a lot of people, controllers and pilots, that I'm anti-technology, and I'm not the least little bit. What I have a problem with usually is we come up with a great idea and then we try to adapt the people to the technology. And I'm a firm believer that the technology needs to adapt to the human. And
that's our mantra.
there's absolutely no doubt that we couldn't do what we do without technology. If you're familiar with any of my articles and whatnot, I'm really big on non-radar and what happens when the system fails. Because when the system fails, it still has to work. And there has to be a continuity of what people understand the building blocks of flying. Or, for instance, if, say, your artificial horizon stops working, you have to know how to fly the airplane. You don't have any choice.
Right.
And you've got to have that basic building block of actually knowing stick and rudder, even if the GPS and all the fancy technology fails. GPS is a great, marvelous thing. It has its, you know, ability to be abused, and the problem we're coming up with is, despite so much accuracy out of the system, I mean, it's just fascinating how accurate these things can be, it is decreasing the amount of situational awareness of a pilot.
Well, I know my instructor always beat into me, aviate first, navigate second, communicate last.
Right.
And those are your priorities.
Well, I think my opinion, not being a personal professional flyer, is that they're
personal
getting,
professional?
Yeah, they're getting to rely on that box so much that they're probably not looking out the window a whole lot. Mm-hmm. They're forgetting the old dead reckoning navigation skills. Mm-hmm. And my opinion there is, what happens if the thing up and quits?
And that's always been my concern. ATC, it's the same sequence of events, if you will. We have to know the fundamental building blocks of what air traffic control, where it came from. It can't be just, oh, look, this is like magic. And a radar scope with full data blocks, and now we have next rad weather on them, the computer processing power we have now. It's all great, marvelous, wonderful thing, but you still have to know how to keep it safe if any portion of it
fails.
Or all of it.
Lose your electrical. I'm going to go ahead and hand out. We're gonna start taking call-ins here,
okay,
so
excellent.
We'll let listeners know what the number is. It's in the area code here in Wisconsin, 920. So if you're local, then you don't need that. And then 230-7987. So if anybody wants to call in and ask Don Brown a question or provide
us. Be patient with us because we haven't tried this yet.
Oh, yeah, we'll try.
Logistics may be a little sticky right now.
Try and get you live going. So,
y'all have trepidations about your technology?
No.
Well, like any new system, you got to take the time.
This is a very mature technology. I can vouch for the fact that it's been in place since 3 a.m. last night.
I just thought that was apropos.
Yeah.
So, again, that call-in number is 920-230-7987. And anybody who has any questions, feel free to call in, and you're welcome to give us suggestions as well.
And so you're not anti-technology. You're just anti the irresponsible use of it.
Yes, and like I say, I always got that rap, and I was the only guy running around the center with a laptop working on everything during my breaks. So I love technology. Have a great time with it. But it does have to consider the human factors when you implement it.
But that's and automation in particular is a huge, huge component of what we look at, because not only do you have to know what to do if the technology fails, but you're no longer current, so to speak.
Right.
I mean, you may have the knowledge in your head, but it'll take you some time to realize, A, there's a problem, B, what the problem is, and C, what you need to do about it, and then actually execute that is a whole other ballgame. So,
yeah, and come up to speed.
How do you keep people proficient at backup systems when they never have to use them?
And it's training, and training.
The engineers will tell you this is a redundant system. We don't need backups.
Yeah. I've heard that tune before.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go ahead and take a break now, and then hopefully we'll get some call-ins when we come back, and I'd like to ask you a little bit about CPDLC when we come back.
Oh, I'd love to talk about that.